we don't see a lot in the rest of our lives as often as we do in labor organizing.
Wes, how can our listeners connect with Ewok? And Brian, how can our listeners connect with WOW?
I'm so glad you asked, Laura. No, I really am, because I feel like we get questions from a lot of workers who they don't know where to start. One of our organizers once said that Ewok is the only help I need a union hotline in the country, and we do it on the budget of a moderately successful hot dog stand. We are the kind of the only game in town for this sort of thing, and we want to talk to anyone who's interested in forming a union. So the best place to start, of course, you can hit up our website. It's very easy to remember. It's workerorganizing.org. Everything you need is there. You can sign up for our trainings, which we do every couple of months. Our next one is in July. You can sign up for that there. We also offer direct support. If you have an emergency in your workplace, you need organizing support, you can fill out our Get Support form, and an organizer will contact you within 48 hours. We will get you started immediately if that's the sort of level of support you need. And if you're interested, training is a great way to go too. I'll add as well, Ewok is hosting its very first conference at the end of June in Detroit, Michigan. It's the first that we know of conference devoted specifically to new workplace organizing. So if you are local to Michigan, if you are involved in new workplace organizing as a union staffer or a rank and file worker or anything in between, we highly encourage you to come to that. And you can also find out more about that at the website workerorganizing.org.
And so for WOW, you can go to workersorganizingworkers.org, all one word, and there's a sign-up sheet there. If you're interested in learning more about what salting is and getting a person to contact you and follow up, if you're interested in salting and want training or want to speak to people to be plugged into a campaign or connected, this is a great website to get that information and to start on your path towards salting. Also, if you're a mentor, if you have decades of experience in organizing and you want to help mentor salts or are a former salt yourself and have that experience, we're also recruiting mentors to help support those salts in those efforts. So, workersorganizingworkers.org.
That wraps it up for this evening's show. We've been listening to Wes Holling of the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee and Brian Denning of Workers Organizing Workers. Thanks to my co-host, Laura Wadlin. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO around the campfire. Become a member during Camp KBOO's Summer Drive, taking place now through June 29th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Do you understand me now? If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. In March, the Trump administration invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which allows the president to detain and deport the subjects and citizens of another country during wartime. Before that day, this law was used only during America's three biggest threats, the War of 1812, World War I, and World War II. That same week, a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order blocking the Trump administration from removing immigrants and refugees from the United States using the Alien Enemies Act, following a lawsuit filed by the ACLU, Democracy Forward, and the ACLU District of Columbia. By the end of the day, the court had extended the temporary restraining order to everyone in danger of removal under the act by the Trump administration. Today we're going to be talking with Jordan Cunnings about this unprecedented use of the Aliens Enemies Act, its blatant unconstitutionality, and what's going on right now for undocumented workers and people who are living in this country under the threat of fear by the current administration and by ICE. Jordan, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us. So Jordan, first of all, can you tell us a little about who you are and your work?
Sure. So I'm the legal director at Innovation Law Lab. We're a nonprofit based in Portland, but we work nationwide. We do immigrant rights work. So that includes coordinating one of the nation's most wide-ranging and progressive universal representation programs. So we assist with the provision of free legal services to immigrants in Oregon who can't otherwise afford counsel. And a big part of our work is also litigation. So we sue the government for unfair practices related to immigrant rights.
Great. Well, thanks, Jordan. Thanks so much for letting us know who you are and the work that you're doing. So, Jordan, can you tell us why this invocation of the Alien Enemies Act is blatantly unconstitutional?
Yeah. So the proclamation under the Alien Enemies Act threatens due process and human rights for immigrants, people of color, and others who are perceived to be immigrants. As you explained a little bit at the beginning, it's an archaic and xenophobic law originally enacted in 1798 when the landscape for immigration looked very different. And it's historically led to grave violations of due process, civil liberties, and human rights. I think the quintessential example that most of us probably learned about in school is Japanese internment. And so the actual internment and taking of property of many U.S. citizens during that time period, I think, is an example we can all look to see how harmful giving the executive these powers can be. And then we're also seeing how that's playing out in real time with invocation against our Venezuelan community members right now.
Are people being detained under this executive order currently?
Yes. So the administration is using this executive order to summarily subject Venezuelan citizens to extraordinary rendition. So that basically means they're being rapidly removed to, in the most prominent example so far, a prison in El Salvador, where they're being detained, basically what the government has said, indefinitely without any chance of relief, based on often unfounded allegations of gang membership.
What possible, it's hard for me to understand this. I mean, what possible right or authority would the executive branch have for detaining someone illegally, but even if they have been detained and are part of a process of removal due to a lack of proof of citizenship, what in any way gives the United States government the right to send them to CECOT, a brutal penal colony in El Salvador? Why wouldn't they just send them back to the country that they're from? I mean, this has just perplexed me, enraged me, made me just completely go verklempt. I mean, trying to understand what is going on with our country right now.
Yes, I hear you. I hear your disbelief and your shock, and I am with you. I think one thing to mention in the backdrop is existing immigration law already provides significant authority to the government to detain foreign nationals in pretty horrible and sometimes indefinite conditions in the United States. That's not specifically what we're talking about today, but I think it's just important to note that the existing laws that have been passed, which we think are very unjust and we fight against every day, already permit the detention and removal of many people who are in this country. This goes sort of beyond those already broad powers and basically says that the government can remove anyone who they determine to be affiliated with this gang and who's from El Salvador very rapidly and without a lot of due process protection. Now, as you mentioned, this is illegal, right? So we contend, and several courts have found, that the proclamation doesn't comply even with the Alien Enemies Act, which is, I think we could have a discussion about whether that law has been superseded by other laws since it's on the books for so long, it still makes sense. in the world in which we now live, which is not 1798. But even assuming the validity and continued relevance of the Alien Enemies Act, the proclamation, several courts have found, does not comply with the Alien Enemies Act. And the Supreme Court has found several times, and in some very sort of procedurally unusual circumstances, that even assuming the validity of subjecting people to rendition under the Alien Enemies Act and with this proclamation, that the government is not providing adequate due process when doing so. So due process requires notice and an opportunity to be heard and to contest the sort of allegations that are being made. In this circumstance, the Supreme Court made that very clear, and the government ignored it. They were giving people a notice written only in English with, I believe it was 12 hours to indicate their desire to contest the allegations being made against them through filing of a habeas corpus petition. Filing a habeas is not a straightforward thing for someone to do from detention in another language in a foreign court system. And so the Supreme Court intervened again to say that the government was not giving proper notice, as they'd already instructed the government to do. So all that to say, I think there's some very clear illegalities and unconstitutional things happening with the president's attempt to use the executive branch's power in such a sweeping way.
I really appreciate it that you do point out that this is not exactly analogous, but that there is some history in the United States of really dirty detention of people in this country right now. There's already unethical and very questionable procedures that were already in place for the detention of human beings in this country prior to the acts that the administration has taken recently, sending Venezuelans to CECOT, where they face a very uncertain future. I mean, one of the things I wonder about with regard to how the administration is interpreting this, and maybe you can help me understand this, there must be some law or some precedent somewhere about the rights of people once they've entered into detention regarding their just treatment and a just removal. I mean, there's an unprecedented attack right now on primarily black and brown people in this country, of exiling them from their families, from their work, from their homes, and sending them to countries where they may be from or may have almost no memory of. But in the process of that removal, there still must be some ethics and some standards. I mean, you can't just take people, pick them up from a detention camp and drop them out of an airplane in the middle of the ocean, right? I mean, you can't kill these people in the process of removing them from the United States and transferring them to another country. So what's going on here? I mean, CECOT is especially brutal, and we don't know if the people who have been sent to CECOT will survive their detention.
Of course, yeah. I think you raised a really important point, and there's several authorities and protections, I think, that are relevant that the government is pretending that it can ignore, and I'd say is willfully sort of flouting or ignoring. So one is the Convention Against Torture. So we're subject to a law that we've agreed to as part of some international treaties, but that's also a law that does not permit deportation of people to countries in which they are likely to face torture, which includes death. And so indefinite detention in some place like CECOT, I think it'd be hard to argue that that is not torture. And so regardless of the authority under which someone is actually removed, a federal court has found in a different case that for people who are being removed to a country other than the one that's been designated as their country of removal in deportation proceedings, they have to have notice and an opportunity to contest that removal under the Convention Against Torture. And so that clearly has not happened in this case. And for, you know, we have limited information, but from what we know, the men who are detained in CECOT are likely facing conditions that I think are very arguably amount to torture, especially with the indefinite nature of detention and what we know about some of the conditions there. So that's one. And then everyone in the United States is entitled to due process, right? So again, notice and an opportunity to be heard, an opportunity to respond to charges raised against you. The way that these renditions happened in the middle of the night with no notice, without an opportunity to contest the designation, clearly violate due process. And the administration is not, they're not trying to be secretive about the fact that they think due process is a waste of time, that it doesn't apply to this huge group of people, and that they'd like to do away with it. You know, Stephen Miller was recently talking about suspending habeas corpus. They view all of this as just an added burden on their project to basically rid the United States of a huge group of people. And that's illegal. And courts are finding that it's illegal. So they're losing the vast majority of these cases. And that is slowing down this project of extraordinary rendition, for which we're grateful. But obviously that requires a lot of work from a lot of people. And that justice doesn't always come quickly enough to protect everyone, unfortunately.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Community Radio. It's our spring fundraising season, and we're asking if you can to consider giving to KBOO. If you'd like to give to KBOO, go to kboo.fm/give. You can also click on the red box that says donate on the mobile app, or text to KBOO at 44321. Finally, if you like regular mail, you can send us a check at KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And thank you for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Recently, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Trump administration with regard to almost 500,000 former citizens of Venezuela who are now refugees and immigrants in the United States. Can you tell me some of the details regarding that ruling by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I was extremely disappointed to see that this week. So the Supreme Court postpones a district court's vacature of the Trump administration's decision to revoke temporary protected status for over 350,000 citizens of Venezuela. So temporary protected status is a temporary, as the name suggests, but it's very important protection for people who are fleeing countries that are war-torn or ravaged by other kind of all-encompassing disasters such that it's unsafe for anyone to return there. The Trump administration, really without considering the facts on the ground in Venezuela and the reality of the political and economic instability there, decided to end that protection for Venezuelans who arrived in 2023. And that affects hundreds of thousands of people. So we think it's really clear, and as the lawsuit argued, that that decision was based on racism. And the district court agreed that it was unlawful for the Trump administration to do so. But unfortunately, the Supreme Court, in a very short order without any reasoning, is allowing the TPS to end basically while the litigation continues.
I mean, if you're a refugee from Venezuela, that almost certainly means that you had to risk crossing Darien's Gap in order to make it to the United States on that long journey, which is one of the most dangerous migratory paths of people coming from the global south to the U.S. It's unbelievable, the cruelty of that decision in light of what these people have done to both prove their refugee status and to try to come to a country that they see as a source of hope and a possible future for them and for their families. Recently, Kristi Noem, the Department of Homeland Security, the Secretary of Homeland Security, when she was asked what habeas corpus means, she said it means the right of the president to remove who he wants from this country. Can you comment on what the secretary said, which is completely inaccurate and a gross misunderstanding of what habeas corpus is? And can you tell us what habeas corpus is?
Yeah, as you noted, she had it exactly on its head, right? Habeas corpus is basically someone's right to contest the illegality of their detention or removal from the United States. It is not the president's right to remove whoever he wants for whatever reason that he wants. And so habeas corpus is turning into one of the most important protections that people have to contest these unlawful detentions and removals. We actually recently filed a habeas case here in the District of Oregon for a client of ours who was subject to unlawful detention based on vague allegations, unfounded and vague allegations of gang membership, and who was at risk of being removed pursuant to the Alien Enemies Act as well. And that habeas was granted. So the district judge here in Oregon agreed that the government was acting unlawfully. So it's an extremely important protection that people have, and it's a tool that advocates are going to be using more and more in the days to come as the government continues its project of unlawful detention.
Thank you. Bringing it home to our region, what are nonprofits and advocacy organizations here in Oregon doing to protect undocumented workers and to protect people from this blatant and illegal use of the Alien Enemies Act and the probable suspension of habeas corpus for the purposes of removal?
Yeah, so I think a lot of us are learning to litigate more, right? So many immigration practitioners are most comfortable practicing before the immigration court and the agency. And a lot of people are getting more comfortable with filing those cases in district court. We've done trainings on habeases. Our office has sample petitions available and model pleadings that we've been sharing and helping educate people in the community so they're prepared to protect their own clients in that way. The best advice I could also give people who are at risk is to consult with an immigration attorney. So we're lucky to have a program called Equity Corps of Oregon here in the state that provides free legal representation to immigrants. And so having a consultation about if you have a pathway to relief from removal or what you can do to protect yourself if you don't is one of the best things I think that people can do, because knowledge in the community is power. The government's actions are actually a lot smaller. They're terrible, right? But they want them to be bigger than they actually have the power to do. And so the fear and the chaos is a big part of their strategy. And so people getting that consult, getting that information about how the Constitution does protect them, does a huge part, I think, in diminishing fear and also diminishing the power of the government to do these unconstitutional things.
What rights to redress do people have if they've been targeted by ICE for removal? How can they protect themselves?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fact-specific question. So everyone's sort of individual case and options are going to be different. But I think the important takeaway is that the Constitution protects everyone. So everyone in the United States has a right to due process. Everyone in the United States has a right against unreasonable search and seizure. So people should know they can't be stopped and questioned on the basis of their race or their perceived ethnicity. They don't have to talk to someone who stops and interrogates them. They can request to talk to a lawyer. All of the constitutional protections that affect any one of us in the United States should apply equally to our immigrant community members as well. And there's some really good Know Your Rights resources available on our website and also from other partners that people can access.
Thanks. We've only got a few minutes left, but I did want to ask about conditions of detention, because this is Prison Pipeline and we are very much concerned about people who are incarcerated and detained. What are detention conditions like for people who have been caught up in these oftentimes illegal seizures of persons and property and even multiple members of families? What are their detention conditions like?
Yeah, they're uniformly bad. So many of these detention centers are run by private prison companies. So their motivation is to detain people for as cheaply as possible for their own maximum profit. So you can imagine what that results in, right? It's bad food, it's crowded conditions, it's limited access to resources like libraries or even comfortable clothing or bedding. Often these facilities are very cold, or sometimes they're very hot, depending on where they are in the time of year. There's very limited access to friends and family members. I think there's a story recently in the news of someone who, you know, was denied the ability to hold their newborn, like shortly after they were born, right? There's not often often you can be denied a contact visit, or your family maybe can't visit you at all because of their own immigration status. And they're really functionally not different than jails and prisons, or places where people are being held for quote unquote the purpose of criminal punishment, right? So detention center is really sort of a euphemism in a way.
Many of these people have not committed any crimes. Many of them are upstanding workers and role models, parents, loved members of families, and yet they're being treated like criminals. Where are they being held in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah. So yeah, these are members of our families and our community members and our workplaces and our places of worship. Also, even people with criminal history, right, should be treated humanely. So it doesn't matter, I think, whether someone has a criminal conviction or not. But in the Pacific Northwest, people are generally held at the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma. So there's no immigration detention in the state of Oregon. That's in part thanks to our state sanctuary law, which is one of the strongest in the country, something that we're especially grateful for, especially in today's world. But so people who are detained in Oregon, unless there's some sort of intervention to stop their detention, are usually swiftly transferred to the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma.
Thank you. My last question for you is, people are feeling heartbroken and in despair over what they're seeing every day in the news. What can ordinary people in the United States and in Oregon, here in Portland, what can an ordinary person do to do something about this, to fight back, to change this? What can somebody do if they're feeling motivated and they want to change what they see happening right now?
That's a great question. I think one thing, there's a tension between not giving in by being too overwhelmed with despair, but also totally tuning out. So I think continuing to pay attention, the tactics that are being deployed against our immigrant community members are coming for all of us, right? And we should also care about them because we care about our immigrant community members. But I think we have to stay engaged, even if it's not things that affect perhaps us and our families quite yet, depending on our citizenship status. There also, I think, are really good opportunities now for accompaniment. So coming alongside members of our community who are most affected by this through physical presence, through offers of support, through the sharing of resources. So there are some great local organizations that are training legal observers. So people who deploy at a moment of unconstitutional ICE enforcement to take notes, to alert lawyers what's going on, and to be a presence of support, or in perhaps a less contentious situation, just accompany people to their immigration appointments or other parts of their daily life in which they might be now more fearful because of what's happening. That's a great opportunity, especially for those of us who are citizens or white people or who feel more secure, have some more societal power to exert in this moment. That's a great way to lend that power and use it in a way to be a support and potentially be a protector to those who are more vulnerable right now because of these unconstitutional actions.
Thank you, Jordan. And if people need, if people want to reach out, if they need legal advice, if they're looking for guidance, if they're in a situation where they're concerned about if they might be subject to being targeted by ICE, or if they have family or friends who they're concerned about, where's a good starting place for them to begin to access networks of resources?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad I can share that in this space. Two resources I can share. One is the Equity Corps of Oregon. So again, this is our statewide universal representation program. Even if folks aren't income qualified for the program, it's still a great starting point for other resources. So there's a statewide hotline. It's 1-888-274-7292, or you can Google Equity Corps of Oregon. In a moment of ICE enforcement, like if someone's knocking at your door, or you're seeing something that looks like kind of an actual ICE enforcement action, the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition has a hotline. That number is 1-888-622-1510. So that's going to be the resource that will get you most immediately connected to legal observers and to on-call legal support.
Great. Thanks so much. We've been talking today with Jordan Cunnings about the Alien Enemies Act and about what's going on right now in this country regarding the detention of undocumented workers and other people. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us today on Prison Pipeline.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intent